I was trying to understand then in the community I was working with in Northern California what we could do to prevent violence. What I'm here to say today is we know a great deal. We know what to do about preventing violence. It's simply a question of political will. I'm going to share with you a little bit about how we kind of look at the problem, and then more importantly, share with you some of the important elements of the solution, knowing full well that other elements will be described by other panelists with a great deal of ability. So of course the question is it a virus? And more importantly, can we end the epidemic? And for me, one of the units of analysis, one of the areas of focus has been cities. And cities are striving to prevent violence. They need support. We need to work together systematically and cohesively. And we need to be very clear that, as Dr. Satcher said, norms are so much at the issue, and we live in a culture of violence. We live in a culture of guns. We live in a culture where power solves our problems. And it's important to understand, just as we understand that air, water, soil, those kind of exposures from the environment affect our health and safety, that the environment, of course, affects our behavior as well, is the method of norms, creating norms, and that too affects our health and safety. Just a few pictures of our culture of violence, dangerous promises, you know, women as sexual objects, if only we add alcohol, joke about a park, a not funny joke. This was a New York Times photograph when Sarajevo was at war. The whole notion of trauma, what you see is what you get. Reality and perception of violence are justifications for people not being outside or letting children outside and not walking to places they normally would. This was part of a study we did that lack of safety and fear, even fear about safety, reduced the likelihood of physical activity, of healthy eating. So when people talk about nutrition and activity-related diseases, safety is a key element of that. This was the first meeting of mayors at the White House in the Obama administration, and the number one topic was violence prevention. I sat there with the head of security for Target, and he said, community safety is our number one concern. If our employees feel unsafe coming to work or our patrons are scared, we're just not going to open a store. So we want thriving communities. Violence not only affects where we work, but whether there will be work, whether we can shop, whether there will be shops, whether we can walk, where kids go to school, how good the schools are. It's unreasonable to expect that people will change their behavior easily when so many forces in the social, cultural, and physical environment are conspiring against those changes. It's unreasonable to expect people to change their behavior when the forces in our society, social, cultural, and physical forces in the environment, are conspiring against such changes. Institute of Medicine said it. Of course, we know about the costs of violence, the stupidity of those costs, all the different kinds of costs. And as I said earlier, the links between violence and chronic disease, the links between violence and virtually every other cause of unhealth. And so this is what it means in Oakland, where I come from, and in so many cities. An African-American child born in Oakland's flatlands will die on average 15 years before a Caucasian child born in the wealthier but not super wealthy Oakland Hills. 15 years. It's not our genetic code, it's our zip code. So more importantly, given that, what can be done to prevent violence? As I say, there's a lot lot we can do. This is the Washington, D.C. transportation system. It was deliberately designed to prevent violence and serious crime compared to similar transportation systems. It probably has about a third of the violence and serious crime. Just paying attention and being strategic makes all the difference. Simple things like clear, visible corridors, things like being able to look down from the booths where the staff are onto the tracks to maintain the safety, can make a tremendous amount of difference. And the built environment was taken even more so as a broad way of designing the community in Medellin, Colombia. This is an international presentation, so I'll give you lots of international examples. In Diadema, Brazil, they focused extensively on closing late night kind of tiny little alcohol outlets and cut the violence by more than 50% within a period of just a couple of years. In LA, we saw the same thing where zoning ordinances based not on politicians but based on community members rallying together led to shutting down 200 liquor stores in 3 years, and we can see in the four-block area around those liquor stores an average 27% reduction in violence and in crime. Think about what that means if you want to walk the streets without being harassed. South Africa, the Sankey Gender Justice Project, a project that was based, I'm proud to say, on our signature tool, the spectrum of prevention, and the notion of multifaceted, comprehensive approaches. They rallied their communities. There was a T-shirt that said, "Problem solved, we'll push the girl off the side." Another one, "I'm too pretty to do homework, I let my brother do it." And so they basically rallied at the stores and said, "You cannot sell this sexist junk. It has an impact on violence. It has an impact on equity." And the stores stopped selling it. A small but visible norms change activity based on community engagement. Our Unity Project, funded for the last 8 years by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I have to say it's heartbreaking that they decided not to fund citywide violence prevention collaboration. Following that, we had a roadmap where we said it's not one particular program. There are very important programs, but it's a comprehensive set of strategies. The idea for that roadmap came from Gary Slutkin here, my co-panelist, as you'll see, if you don't know it already, a brilliant leader in this field. It talks about partnerships, it talks about strategy, it talks about prevention. Perhaps most importantly, it has a policy platform, a platform that didn't mention guns because of the restriction on guns, but nevertheless was building community power, understanding between cities. As important as the leadership we provided was the opportunity for cities to talk with one another. And one of the most important findings in our initial assessment was that cities with the greatest coordination had the lowest rates of youth violence. And based on the fact that it was coordination, we've been looking extensively at multi-field collaboration. And right now, with funding from the Kresge Foundation, we're looking at a series of sectors that can prevent violence and what the role of different sectors can be. We had a major mayor bring together all the cabinet members of his city to talk with us, and the I won't mention the city, but the head of economic development, someone who many of you may know, came up to us and said, "Well, you know, I got to run, and after all, there's no relationship between economic development and violence prevention." That's why we think we need to be very explicit about the role of all these different sectors and how they can all play a role in violence prevention. We use our tool, Collaboration Multiplier, to help figure out the strategy. We identify shared outcomes, ways that by working together we can achieve more than any of us could achieve alone. An example from Chula Vista, California, where we worked on the links between violence and physical activity, was work to improve and beautify public space. We don't give art and design enough credit as being a key tool. What we see in our communities, what are the feel of our communities, is essential in reducing violence. Another example from Minneapolis, where we saw a 64% decrease in homicides of young people from 15 to 24. Where are we going now? Where do we need to go as a field? We need comprehensive strategy and planning. So much of the work that's going on emphasizes intervention and treatment. We really need balanced approach, multi-sector coordination. We need to focus on the neighborhood. The city is the unit of analysis, and the particular neighborhoods where we can make the greatest difference. And we need to recognize that this is a preventable problem. As a unity leader said, once it's described as a public health problem, I realize it's preventable and I've got to do something about it. We also need to start thinking for the first time of the interrelationship of different types of violence. We understand from a causal perspective, but in order to be effective in this country, we need to build a movement where the groups working on different kinds of violence truly work together cohesively, collaboratively, and intensively. We also need to work with healthcare. The next session I'm giving over at the Westin is on the links between healthcare reform and violence prevention. There's an opportunity there that's barely been seized. We need to get our way in, whether we're talking about community transformation grants or, more importantly, whether we're talking about reforming the entire healthcare system so that it's a system that recognizes preventing violence is one of the smartest, most important, most humane, and by the way, most cost-effective things it can do. And we need to work internationally. That's why we're part of the Violence Prevention Network of the World Health Organization. Albert Einstein said intellectuals solve problems, but geniuses prevent them. Really, it's not about genius. It's about all our voices together, everyone here, building a movement. Please give me your cards at the end. I'd love to share more information with you. Thank you very, very much.